Hello and welcome to Podcast by the Peer, the podcast where freelance copywriters talk about all things freelancing and copywriting. Whether you're a seasoned copywriter or just dipping your toe into the world of words, pull up a deck chair and join us as we dive into the minds of some of our freelance favourites. I'm your host, Tom Davies, a freelance copywriter based in Brighton. And today, I'm joined by Grand Theft Auto 5 completer, Digital Summit speaker, and the Ryan Reynolds tweeter. It's the legend herself, Mel Barthel. Welcome to the show, Mel.
Hello. What an intro. Amazing. Thank you for recognising my prowess at GTA 5, because that I was like, not enough people mention that when they speak to me.
Should be on your CV. In case Ryan's listening to the show, is there anything you want to say to him?
Ryan, please unfollow me on Twitter because it's the only reason I'm still there. I need to please just release me. Ideally, follow me somewhere else first so I retain some bragging rights. But yeah, it's the only reason I'm clinging on to my Twitter profile.
Do the right thing, Ryan. Right. Mel, before we get going, I've got to congratulate you on your recent success at Global Women in Marketing. A recommended copywriter.
Yeah, I was very honoured last night. I'm a little tired, not through alcohol or anything. I'm taking a year off that before I'm 40. But yeah, I was very honoured to get the highly commended certificate. Shout out to Vicky Ross, who did the judging. It was a really fun evening. And also shout out to the winner, whose name is Fran Cliff. I was very happy for her to win because I'd had a good chat with her beforehand and she was very nice. So you want someone nice to win. You don't want to be pipped to the post by someone who's a bit of a knob. So yeah, congratulations to her.
Well, yeah, congratulations to both of you and thank you for saving some batteries for today.
Can I really quickly mention as well, Megan Rose Douglas, who I was keeping updated. She couldn't make it to the evening. So I was sending her some DMs and she got a special mention award as well. So congratulations to Megan too.
Well done, Megan. Awesome. Right then, LinkedIn. It's a funny old place, isn't it? But with many more copywriters now making it their digital home, caused by somewhat by the slow demise of Twitter, now X, we thought we'd have a bit of a chinwag as to how you, dear listener, can make LinkedIn work for you. But before we tuck into today's topic, Mel, can you tell our listeners who you are and how you became a freelance copywriter?
I will. I'll just really quickly say I thought you were going to say how you, the listener, can make LinkedIn your bitch. So I was expecting you to say that. Yes, my name is Mel Barfield and I'm a creative copywriter and I'm quite late to the party. I had over a decade in local government purgatory is how I like to describe it, and did a course through work. I was doing events and communication at the time and community engagement, and I did a copywriting course and felt like my brain had been cracked wide open and saw rainbows and sunshine and lollipops and things. And from that point onwards, it kind of coincided with, so that was in like the, I think I did the course in December and it was the next March kind of time. Was it March or January? Whenever Sophie, you can ask her next time when you speak to her, whenever the Kickstarter came about for Freelancer Magazine, that then started winking at me. And I was doing loads of copywriting research, learning, practice on my own time. I was getting up on a weekend early on a Sunday morning, using my lion to learn all I could about copywriting, just like a sponge, just absorbing all of it, watching all the YouTube videos, just reading all the books, practicing. And then Freelance Magazine came along and I realized that I could actually potentially do it as my job instead of a job. But my previous jobs include being a careers advisor, working in prisons and private schools and all sorts of places. And then I've also done local government admin type roles. I trained as a childminder when my baby was, well, our eldest, Jemima, was a tiny baby, just because I can't do nothing. Ended up doing qualified as an early years teacher when she was about one. But I finally found this is the right job for me. This is where I should be and what I should be doing after a very long time of doing things that I shouldn't have been doing. I like to think it's quite ironic that I was a careers advisor, not knowing at all what I wanted to do myself. Copywriting actually came up. I don't want to insult you by saying we're a similar age, but I think you might have done the QDOS test at school, where the careers, does that ring a bell? It's like a multiple choice test.
I might have. I probably wasn't paying attention. I might have.
Well, there were two things that came up on that for me that I still remember 24 years later. One was Undertaker, which came up on everyone's, and the other was Copywriter. And at the time, I kind of asked briefly what it was, and they said, oh, writing for adverts. And that, at the time, didn't appeal to me at all, so I just moved on. But yeah, quite funny that that's one of only, it was either this or becoming an Undertaker in my late 30s. I was going to have a career switch. It was going to be one of them.
I guess you'd never go out of business being an Undertaker anyway.
Well, this is true.
Oh, there's a lot I want to ask you out of that. I mean, we're going to talk about Freelancer magazine later because, of course, you're a features writer for the magazine. And I also listened to your Digital Summit talk as well, which you can find on Mel's website, and I'll also link into the show notes. But I found it interesting in there that you were talking about your previous writing jobs, how you're constrained to write in quite a maybe dry voice, and how it maybe paved the way or gave birth to you now as someone who's, you don't have that voice at all, especially in your own branding and probably with the clients you work with.
Yeah, I've definitely rebelled against the kind of stiff, formal local government tone of voice that you need to have. It's all very much like the council this and the council that, and there's, you'd never use I or we or even you very much. It was all very sterile. So yeah, I perhaps rebelled a bit against that and got a bit too far sometimes. And yeah, but I should point out, this is one of those things that I know some people who work with tone of voice, it's still a tone of voice that isn't just being like innocent and having a funny, irreverent tone of voice. It's a type in itself, the local government way. And I know the .gov website, not that I was working on that, but that is often held up as an excellent example of a consistent tone of voice. So there's definitely a place for it, but I don't want to be writing that anymore. Definitely not.
Oh, totally. Yeah, there's definitely a place for that voice. Right. So, Mel, you're very present on LinkedIn and you put me somewhat to shame compared to how little I post.
Some might say too present.
No, not at all. Not at all. And I'm going to say this word. I know I said it before I call, but do you have a strategy when it comes to posting on LinkedIn?
I was talking to your friend of mine, Ben McKinney, about this on our little audio event that we do on LinkedIn. And there's this thing, like, I think it was Ross Jukes was saying, you have to put on a voice when you say the word strategy because it sounds so wanky to say it. Ben suggested the word approach. My approach, do I have an approach? And I do have an approach. I don't have a strategy. My approach is to be myself on LinkedIn. I often think I should be more strategic. And there's sometimes elements of strategy that come in because I get nagged by my business coach, Jodie Newman, to remind people every now and then of what I actually do rather than just churning out my brain farts. So I'm introducing a smidge of strategy, smidge, which is like every 3 to 4 posts, just go, oh, I must remember to say what I can actually do for clients, because I think it's easy to forget to do that. I often get told by people when I meet them in real life and only know them from online, or what people I know in real life, like family members, oh, every time I open LinkedIn, you're all over it. I'm like, thanks. Thanks for the likes. People say that they see me on LinkedIn loads, and like, throw me a sum every now and then. Come on. But yeah, there's lots and lots of lurkers out there. So it's well worth posting. And I'm going to pull you over onto LinkedIn more, Tom. I'm going to nag you.
Okay. It's interesting what you say there, because it sounds like the key is to just be yourself. Because if you're not being yourself, things will unravel sooner or later, won't they? Because you're just going to find it so difficult to be consistent in how you're presenting yourself on LinkedIn and other platforms. But do you think within that thought there lies a problem where you're trying to be yourself, but equally you're trying to stand out because there's a lot of noise on there? And like, how do you find that balance?
I think it's difficult because we don't always realize how interesting seemingly mundane stuff can be to other people. And Dave Holland's a master for this, of taking something that on the face of it is a little bit of a dull story, but making it really engaging and interesting by adding in an almost over the top levels of detail. And I just think everyone's nosy and they want to know what's going on in other people's lives. They want to be able to relate to one another. So throwing in some personal stuff, whatever you're comfortable sharing, obviously, like if you don't want to share stuff about your personal life, but perhaps there's a hobby in there that other people might find interesting. And, oh, I didn't know you collected Warhammer. I was listening back to some of the episodes. I know that Ellen was talking about Craig, her husband, likes Warhammer. Those kind of little, those are the things that give a bit of colour to what people's lives are like. And we are fundamentally nosy bastards, which is why I called my newsletter that. We want to know what's going on in other people's lives. We want to know when people, like what their strategies are for their, how they run their business. And there's so many shysters out there who are like, oh, here's my hooks for how to master LinkedIn. And it's all so bland and generic that all you've got to do is mention that you, I don't know, really love some obscure band. And then people are like, oh yeah, I know, I've heard of them. I saw them at Reading or whatever. I just think that there's so many opportunities to connect with other people on LinkedIn in a way that isn't just about, oh, I do words for money. Oh, I do words for money too, or whatever the industry is.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. And if you have that mindset, if you're someone that is happy to and perhaps even brave enough to post that kind of personal information about yourself on LinkedIn, you've already got that kind of perfect foil there, haven't you? Because as you say, a lot of it is like this 10 ways generic noise. So especially when I'm on LinkedIn, it's those kind of personal posts that really resonate with me. And you get to kind of get a glimpse of that person behind that little thumbnail image of them, don't you?
Definitely. And it doesn't have to be anything super duper personal, like the time you had some horrible situation with your child. Or like, there doesn't have to be heart-wrenching, horrible stuff. It can literally just be just little tiny glimmers of like day-to-day life. Like, oh, this is the mug I've used for the last 12 years. It's chipped and it's rubbish. But like, don't crowbar in, unless it's with a knowing wink, crowbar in some LinkedIn learning necessarily, but just showing people a bit more about who you are and what you're interested about. Because if you're interested in something, then there's a massive chance that there'll be someone else out there who's interested in it too. And that's the biggest complaint people seem to have about LinkedIn, is that it's, oh, you go on there, you scroll for a bit, you go, oh God, everyone's an intimidating bro. I'm just going to jump straight out again. So I can't possibly post. I don't want to be in this place. So curating your feed can make that, make LinkedIn a much nicer place. So as soon as you see someone who's a bit of a wanky bro, excuse my language, then it's a case of just unfollowing them or muting them or removing that connection and curating your feed so that you're seeing people that you enjoy hearing from and seeing.
Yeah, completely. I guess maybe a bit of a comforting thought to me when I do post on LinkedIn is that the likes or the comments you get, it's, whilst we do pay attention to that, it's kind of what you said earlier, that there's a lot of lurkers. There's people that maybe will never comment on any of you, on your content, but you're in their head. And if they do need your service at some point, hopefully that content's going to pay for itself in that they're going to think about you.
Definitely. I've had quite a few clients who've directly contacted me either on LinkedIn or they found my website through LinkedIn and then emailed me and said, oh, love your LinkedIn stuff. And it always makes me cringy saying that. I'm not very good at bragging, so I might just turn inside out slightly at any timeline saying anything that's complimentary about myself. And yeah, lurkers are a thing. Lurking gherkins, I call them. But they're looking, they're listening. But as well as the lurkers, another reason, even if you're not consistently getting tons of likes or whatever, LinkedIn's algorithm is listening. The lurking algorithm is there too. And when somebody goes onto LinkedIn and searches for a copywriter, LinkedIn's going to favor in the results. First, it's going to favor the people who pay to be on LinkedIn. I don't, because don't want to type. But then next will be the people who regularly use it. If you're going on there and only ever looking at other people's posts and not actually posting yourself, then you're not going to be very high up on the list when somebody's searching for a copywriter. And I've had people say, oh, I just did a LinkedIn search for a copywriter and you were one of the people that came up. So being present even if it, you might feel like you're being a bit annoying by posting every day, like I do, it pays off, literally pays off.
Totally. I didn't know that, actually. That's news to me. So, Mel, I don't know about you, but as I said before this call, I really get the fear when it comes to posting. And I guess there's an added pressure with copywriters, perhaps, in if there's a typo, someone mentioned it, it can feel like your career has ended. Or maybe that's just me, I don't know. But do you have any tips for listeners for getting over that stupid, irrational, bottom twitching fear when it comes to hitting that post button?
I'm going to try really hard not to be sound flippant about it, because I know for some people it is bum-clenchingly awful and they have to walk away after posting. But I would just say, can we just have a moment for the proofreaders, because it's even worse for them. If they do a typo, that's even worse. I've even got as one of my headline things, never knowingly grammatically correct. So I'm quite open and out there about, I don't care if my grammar's wrong. So that doesn't stop me. But I do understand why people are so, and I know people who will start drafting a LinkedIn post in the morning and it'll get to like 4 or 5 o'clock and they still haven't hit send on it. If it helps to know this, my all-time top performing post is one I whacked out in 5 minutes, just brain to fingers. I think there's, at the word authentic, there is a lot to be said for not over-editing yourself, not over-sanitizing what you're putting out there, not overthinking it. Just get over yourself and post. And it might bomb, but so what? If no one sees it, no one knows it's bombed. So there's stuff, I can't remember who said it, first of all, but there was someone that said, if you're in a room of real people in real life, not that people on LinkedIn aren't real, well, some of them aren't. If you said something and 4 people gave you a thumbs up after, you'd feel great. But 4 thumbs up online feels like a failure to some people, because they're like, oh, I only got 4 likes. But there's an awful lot of other people lurking, appreciating, enjoying what you're putting out there that you'll only know about like 6 months down the line. It's also important to just highlight, I said this earlier to when I was in an audio event, it's not a sprint. It's a marathon, not a sprint, whatever the saying is. I'm not good with words, honest. Don't pay me for words. Not verbal words, anyway. You have to invest the time and look at it as a long game, because otherwise, if you think you're going to go in there, blast out some posts for 2 weeks and then reap the rewards, it just doesn't work like that. And having a being gentle to yourself is important, and not setting yourself up to do 3 posts every day. Firstly, the LinkedIn algorithm doesn't like you doing too many posts a day, but also it's just a fast track to feeling fed up with it all. But getting over yourself is the biggest hurdle, I think, for a lot of people. And just going, oh, I'll just send it out there. Just ship it. It's not a client work. I'll just ship it.
Just do it.
Just do it.
Press post and do it.
And that's where I have the app on my phone. I sometimes will draft a post in notes because of I've had a few times where I've started drafting something in LinkedIn and gone away and come back and it's gone. And then, nuts. So I sometimes do it in notes. Sometimes if I'm having an especially inspired day and I think of several things I want to turn into a post, then I'll just schedule them there and then on LinkedIn, because then it's out of my head and I've got a couple of days of content already lined up. But yeah, getting over yourself and reminding yourself, like, what is the worst that can happen by me posting this? As long as you're not posting something defamatory or something that's going to harm your prospects, then what is the absolute worst that could happen? Actually, Dave Holland said earlier on the LinkedIn audio live, he was saying about the turning point for him on LinkedIn was when he put out this post and it ended up just going absolutely wild. And that's the best that could happen. So instead of thinking, oh, what's the worst? What's the actual best that could come out of this? Well, you could get some new actual paying clients. One time again, I hear stories from people who've done that and literally got clients directly related to a particular post they put out.
That's interesting. And obviously Dave Holland he's nailed LinkedIn. He's just such a legend on there. And I'm actually probably going to lose all 7 of my listeners now, but I'll let you into a secret. I actually At one point, I was over-engineering and overthinking my posts so much that on one occasion, I actually did phone my friend and just say, mate, can you check that this post is okay? You know, when you look at something too much.
Oh, mate.
Yeah. So I win the ultimate loser award because I doubt
No,
anyone
no,
has done
no.
that.
It's not, it doesn't make you loser. It just shows that you care. Perhaps I show that I don't care.
No. I need to be more Mel, for sure.
Well, I agree.
Be more Mel.
I just, oh no. Are you referencing a hashtag that someone put, because there's someone that we know, that I know, did use that as a hashtag after I nagged her so much at Copicon. Her name's Danny. She's like, I need to be more Mel. And then she wrote a post about how she needs to be more Mel and used it as a hashtag. I was like, no, just please scrap that bit. Cut that bit out. That's too embarrassing.
No, I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to read the hashtag when I promote this show.
That's no. What
be more Mel.
Right. It's going to turn inside out now.
Mel, not specifically copywriters as such, but what are like the biggest mistakes you see being made on LinkedIn, content or otherwise?
The biggest mistake is one that you don't actually see, which is what you just said you do, which is thinking yourself out of posting. And I think a lot of people who do end up starting to post on LinkedIn regularly and see the results will often say, oh, I wish, just wish I'd done it sooner. And I'm not on permission from LinkedIn. I'm not affiliated with LinkedIn. I did get given, full disclosure, got given a laptop sticker by someone from LinkedIn at Nottingham Digital Summit, but they haven't bought me. Not that easy to buy. No, I think it's just not showing up. That's the problem, the biggest mistake. And the second biggest mistake is trying to be something you're not. I see it when people post with very loud, wacky, kind of like daring, edgy, the edge lords of LinkedIn. And then you have a conversation with someone and they're like, oh yeah, that guy. Yeah, he actually stole a load of copy off my website. Naming no names. I'll DM you later, Tom. And that's a massive mistake. Well, obviously plagiarizing is the biggest mistake, but in terms of like genuine people who aren't plagiarizing, trying to present yourself as something you're not is, you said it earlier, it's not a good idea because eventually you get found out. You get found out during a client call when you're having a discovery call and a chat about a brief. You'll get found out in person when you meet people. So if you're trying to put on this pretend persona, it might be tempting to try and kind of boost your profile. But if it isn't really who you are, then it's only going to work for you short term. You'll get found out eventually as being a beige, boring fart.
That's it. Keep it real. Keep it real. In the words of, who was that, Ali G? Keep it real. Keep it real.
There's nothing wrong with, I should just say, there's nothing wrong with being a beige, boring fart. Own it. If you're boring, there'll be other boring people out there who like you. So like, I'm not saying don't be boring. I'm saying if you are boring, own it. Lean into it. Be the most boring person.
Be the best
like,
beige.
Make that. Be the best beige. Beige is a great color if it's a buffet, I should add. That's my favorite kind of buffet is always beige. But don't try and pretend not to be.
Good advice. Good advice. Now, I've got to mention, Mel, your new live LinkedIn chats with my previous guest, Ben McKinney. I attended the first a couple of weeks back. It was brilliant. I did miss today. Can you tell our listeners what it's about and how they can get involved?
Well, Ben and I have been talking about doing a podcast for a very long time, but we decided that we'll go for busy, not lazy. We're both too busy. As you know, there's a lot of work that goes into doing a podcast. And we kept going round and round in circles talking about the admin side of it. And he has a young family as well. We've both got children. So we just ended up not doing it over and over again. And then I probably suggested it to him. He's not very tech or LinkedIn savvy. That sounds really rude. But if you were there early, you would hear his microphone stopped working halfway through. Well, it didn't even, not even halfway through. It stopped working at the beginning and then halfway through as well. So we're not technical people, but I thought that would be a really useful place to have a chat. And we're kind of missing that. Having stepped away from Twitter, I miss having Content Club on a Tuesday morning, though I believe it does still happen. I'm not on Twitter. So I miss that when you're gathered around the glow of a hashtag and chatted every Tuesday morning. I miss that. And I think there's something to be said for getting together as a little community of copywriters and freelancers and just chewing the cud, chatting the stuff. So we thought, we'll just do one. Actually, before we did our first one, we were at CopyCon. Like, should we just go live from a very loud pub? And we did it with like 5 minutes notice, and just tried it out with Dave and Ben, because I was like, I'll just ask you about Copy or Die, their new agency. So we did that. And then we're like, oh, well, let's do it properly the next day. Let's like plan it so people can come along. And that was a little bit of a fail because, well, firstly, Dave forgot to press record on his phone to record the chat. Secondly, we didn't realize that the time we'd set it for, 5 p.m., was the exact time the building closed. So we had to go outside by a busy road. It was all in all a little bit of a disaster because no one could hear us. This is the spirit of have a go, get over yourself, just do it, that I want people to bring to LinkedIn, because people don't mind if it all goes a bit tits up. People quite like it if it does. And so we thought, all right, next time we'll actually do it properly and we'll plan ahead and do this the LinkedIn audio event. And we got a really lovely response and people seemed to enjoy having a space to have a chat. And actually one of the first comments we had was about how difficult a lot of copywriters have found it this year. And this is something where being yourself and being open about that kind of thing on LinkedIn really pays off, because you find out that, oh, it's not just me that had a tumbleweed springtime of 2023. It's quite like across the board. People have found it difficult for various reasons. Some of them, we won't even say the name of that thing that's come this year and threatened copywriters' jobs. And so it felt really nice. It felt like we were, the risk of sounding very cheesy, sounds like, it feels like we're starting a bit of a little copy community over on LinkedIn that hopefully people can kind of chip in, say their piece, listen in if they don't want to talk. And there's a reason that we picked the audio event instead of video, because if you go, just as an explainer, for people who aren't on LinkedIn chronically like me, you've got two different types of LinkedIn event. The kind of native events. One is the audio event, which is just spoken and people can put their hand up and speak. And it's a bit like a Twitter Spaces or Clubhouse, not that I ever had Clubhouse on that, an Android kind of gal. But people can go on stage, hold the mic, speak, and then I'll kick them off quite brutally in the case of Nikki Pilkington. Sorry, Nikki. And it's much more interactive, whereas the video events that you can do on LinkedIn, you can stream it and record it via a third party provider, but you don't get that audience interaction. And that's what we've really enjoyed, I think, in the audios that we've done, is having the opportunity to speak to people like Graham Piper. I was like, it's Graham on Twitter. And just hearing people's voices and sharing experiences and tips and stuff. I don't know when the next one will be, how regularly we'll do it, because we started out thinking, maybe we'll do it every 2 weeks. And then a week after the first one, we were like, I kind of fancy doing it again today. But too late now. So we're still working it out and we'll be led by what the, for want of a better term, audience wants. But yeah, amazing. It's just a different way to use LinkedIn, really, that involves people more and it comes quite easy to us to just have a chat. You might have noticed I'm a waffler, so...
No, waffle away. It is a great event. And, you know, if you want to get involved, listener, just go and give Mel a DM on LinkedIn or Ben, and they'll give you more details about those live audio events. Right, Mel, before we get on to name that attraction, I've got to mention, obviously, how great Freelancer Magazine is and that you're a features writer for the magazine as well. How has that experience been? Because I imagine it's a gig many writers would love to be part of.
Oh, I feel really lucky. Yeah, I actually had to slam the laptop shut and run away when I saw Sophie's email, because as I said earlier, the magazine Kickstarter was something that really just kept on winking at me and kept on giving me the eyes. And I actually signed up to the Kickstarter and as a funder while I've had a job. I had no intentional plan to leave. And I was just like, oh, this is calling to me. So to then be asked to write for it was amazing. It came about because, well, I'm not sure if it's why it came about, but there was the book club. The first piece I did, Sophie asked me to actually host the book club with Dan Nelkin about his book, Self-Help Guide for copywriters. And so I was like, yes, please. And I just started out, I'd do three different articles for Freelance Magazine. The book club has since evolved to be Creator Club to broaden out a bit, not just for authors. But yeah, it was, I mean, talk about imposter syndrome though. I was like, oh my God, like sending in my first pieces to Sophie were just, it was awful. It's like how you feel about posting on LinkedIn, but yeah, times five to seven. But yeah, I was so, but that came about because Sophie had seen me dicking around on LinkedIn and Twitter and just putting my personality out there, and she didn't hate it. So yeah, I feel very honored, and I'm absolutely delighted to have got to know her really well as well and be able to call her a friend. She's a legend.
Yeah.
Love you, Sophie.
Yeah. Sophie is a legend, although she's not very good at volleyball. Neither am I.
Well, you have other strengths.
Yeah. She'll hate me for saying that. Right. Mel, we've got to go to a listener question. And you mentioned her earlier. We've got one here from Nikki Pilkington, SEO copywriter, who asks, why does a self-processed cheese lover have such basic cheese likes? Here we go. Charros for the win, not bloody Bar Baby Bell. I butchered that one.
Do you want to do it again?
No, go on. We're wrong with that. We're wrong with that. It's all about authenticity on this
point. We are authentic.
Yeah.
Well, I think the Baby Bell reference might be to do with my profile on LinkedIn where I go, I don't know, I might be wrong. Nikki can correct me if this is where she's got this idea from. I say, Mel, like Baby Bell. Mel, because you've got this pronunciation tool on LinkedIn. You can only record it from your phone on the mobile app. But it's how you pronounce your name, because obviously some people's names are pronounced. Well, you just butchered whatever that cheese was.
You can't always join that club.
I did that for you, Tom. I did that for you. You can't always tell how someone's name is pronounced. It's something that you can use even if you've got a very bog standard name like Mel or Tom. No offense. You can use it just to add a little bit of interest, a little bit of differentiation between other profiles. So I think that might be what Nikki's referring to. I'm actually a massive fan of Baby Bell. My favorite cheese changes on a weekly basis. But I like a bit of Black Sticks Blue, the orange one with the veins, veiny bits. Yes.
Nice.
I like a blue cheese. I like a Sophie Cross's favorite cheese. Would you like to know? It's insider intel.
Go on.
Sophie Cross's favorite cheese is one of my absolute all-time favorites, and it's called Torta Dolce Latte. And it's dolce latte cheese with layers of mascarpone.
Wow.
And it's like horizontal layers. And it is amazing. It's so good. Really good on hot toast, but you can't get it everywhere. She's obviously posh because I think it's in Waitrose. Another top tip as well is Philadelphia, but the cheap version, because no one buys full price brand in Philadelphia, do they? With a little bit of crumbling of Stilton on top on a biscuit. That's a good combo too. But yeah, so my Baby Bell reference, Nikki, is only because it rhymes with Mel. If you can think of a better cheese that rhymes with Mel, I'll change it just for you.
There you go. There's a task for you, Nikki, and listeners. Another cheese that rhymes with Mel. Right, Mel, we've got to move on to our features round. Name That Attraction, sponsored by Arama, your go-to podcast editors. And with every guest, we ask them to come up with a name and strapline for a new attraction coming to Brighton Pier. All fictional, of course. Mel, my previous guest, Ben McKinney, has set your attraction task, which is to come up with a name and strapline for the Dodgems. What have you got for us?
Well, first of all, thank you for the traumatic flashbacks. I hated the Dodgems as a kid. And I literally, it was instant, came up with a name, and I didn't even think any further on it, because to me, the Dodgems is Whiplash. But I'd like you to add in your heads, Tim Westwood, who has now been cancelled, he'd have like these sound effects like, bah, 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 bah. I just imagine that. So it's like Whiplash, bah, 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 kind of noises, just to give you a headache as well. And the tagline, I'm really sorry for the tagline, but it's just because it reminded me of being, oh dear, I almost said rear-ended by my brother. And I just did. Bashed by other people and getting that horrible. I had whiplash from it. I also got, my nose got bashed into the steering wheel on a Dodgem. So my tagline for is, have you been in an accident that wasn't your fault? Next time, Dodgem. So yeah, I didn't overthink that one at all. I just couldn't think of anything else after reliving that very traumatic experience of being rear-ended by my brother.
No.
Apologies.
I think you win it with the sound effects. That's nice one, Mel.
There's some explosion noises in there as well.
Love it. Mel, while you're here, would you like to set the new attraction task for my next guest, which is Sophie Cross?
On the theme of LinkedIn and not being shy, I'm going to go for a coconut shy.
Oh, there you go, Sophie. A name and strapline for a coconut shy.
The coconuts tie in well with Sophie as well, because she's always going on exotic trips and stuff. So it's like a double whammy.
Yeah, I like it. Nice one. Homework set. And Mel, if people want to hear more from you, where can they find you?
Well, it'll shock you to hear that I am on LinkedIn quite often. So my LinkedIn, I think it's Melanie Barfield. I did a dramatic dropping of the A-N-I-E. A year or so ago, just because everyone calls me Mel apart from my mum. But if you search Mel Barfield, you'll find me on LinkedIn. My website is allcopymel.com. And I also have a Substack, which is called Nosy Bastard News. And if you hang around on my website long enough, an annoying pop-up will appear and ask for your email address.
Awesome. And of course, you can also just use the hashtag BeMoreMel and you'll find Mel that way too.
I don't know if you will find me that way.
Nice one, Mel. Thanks for stopping by. And if you found this episode useful, do consider leaving a review for the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you want to join me for a chinwag about freelancing or copywriting, do drop a line at coastalcopy.co.uk. And I'll see you next time on Podcast by the Peer. This episode of Podcast by the Peer is sponsored by Sussex Audiology Centre, based in Sussex. When a prospect says to you on a video call, "Can you cut your project fee by 50%? Is that really what they said? Or are your ears playing tricks with you? Well, to make sure it's not the latter, why not get your hearing checked out? With branches in Hove, Hayward Heath, Goring, Lewis and Ferring, Sussex Audiology Centre are a family-run business who can help you with expert assessment, diagnostics, advice and fitting on all things hearing. To find out how Sussex Audiology Centre can help you, or to book your hearing assessment, call 0330 3203 413 or visit sussexaudiologycentre.co.uk. And I'll see you next time on Podcast by the Peer.